Hello, this is Terry Burdick greeting to you today from the Commercial News in Danville, Illinois for Saturday and Sunday, October 25th and 26th. We're going to start on the first day page. We'll work our way through the paper today. I will tell you it's kind of light reading, so let's see what it has to hold. Our front page today, the big headline is In the Middle. Mervis's book inspires exhibit at State Museum. All of our stories today on the front page are brought to us by commercial news reporter Christy Jankowski. An exhibit at the Illinois State Museum brings Central Illinois past to life with authentic photographs, excerpts of a memoir, along with popular books and art of the time period. Stephen Nako said the exhibit shows how life was through the telling of Sybil Mervis's stories. "We want to grab certain points of your life as a story," he said, "and that brings it to life." History curator Erica Holst of the Springfield-based Illinois State Museum helped create the exhibit after reading Mervis's memoir. The exhibit opened on Saturday, October 18th at its Lockport Gallery, and it is based on a book titled In the Middle. Mervis said the title just made sense. In the middle, growing up in the middle America, in the middle of the 20th century, in the middle class, so that was just the fitting title for it, said Mervis. As for how the book came about, she said when she wrote around 40 little stories following her supper, she said one of her teachers from a writing course gave her that advice. "I was writing it in chronological order, which I thought was the way to do it," Mervis said. "I showed it to my teacher, and she said, 'No, no, that's not the way to do it.' She said, 'Sit down and write little stories.' So after supper every night, after I did the dishes, I went to the television to watch the news, and I'd sit down and write a memory of my childhood. And then a bit later, she was inclined to publish the stories." Mervis, 92, was a wealth of history. "And I had photographs because my father had a speed graphic camera during the 1940s like a newsman," she said, adding that she had many sepia-colored photographs in her basement. So those were used in the exhibit. Mervis said childhood was vastly different when she was young. "It was so much slower, peaceful, and quieter, and less stress than kids have today. We walked to school four times a day. We didn't stay at school for lunch," she said. And she added, "Technology has made an impact on family relationships today. Our connections were with our aunts, uncles, and cousins, not some stranger over some electronic thing. And a life to be appreciated," declared Mervis, adding that is what her book is about. And for Mervis, the news was delivered via radio, not through television. She recalled the start of the war and how it impacted children at the time. "That was my intent. And if anyone wants to learn how children lived back then this is right here in that book," she said. Mervis said the exhibit really brought her stories to life. "Go to the exhibit. It's beautifully done. There are these big panels that tell about our lives back then," she said. "It's illustrated with old photographs. It's well illustrated, and you get a complete understanding of how simple life was back then, aside from the war." Holst said she made contact with Mervis after she read her book. "What Sybil created in her book, with her words and pictures, has become the touchstone for this amazing exhibit," Holst said about how the book is reflected in the exhibit. You can find the exhibit at the Lockport Gallery in Lockport. They're open from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday. And if you have any questions about the exhibit or the museum, please call 815-838-7400. In city news on our front page, District 118 dismisses business director. Narcissus Rankin, who served as business director for Danville District 118, was dismissed without pay during Wednesday's school board meeting. Rankin addressed the board during the public comment session as well, where she detailed communication between the board and her about certain fees. Rankin said, "I know that transparency is important, so in the interest of truth and transparency, I'd like to address the concerns that were raised in the letter regarding late payments regarding TRS fees." She said there was miscommunication within TRS about fees that could be waived. "Unfortunately, we were unaware of this waiver process until the first set of fees had already been processed once the necessary uploads were complete. TRS did, in fact, waive outstanding fees," Rankin said. She added that there was the use of an employee's credit card. She attributed the vendor's refusal to accept the purchase order, as well as the lack of available district-issued credit cards to complete the transaction. Rankin said she has written documentation from former board members attesting to all of it. "To insinuate that I don't understand my fiduciary duty is not only incorrect," she continued, "it's a direct attack on my professionalism and integrity as a certified school business official, management of the business office." Rankin claimed there were no documents, conversations, or anything with her concerning excessive breaks or personal business happening during work hours. She went on to address overtime costs, claiming other employees and departments should be scrutinized, and she said the dismissal came to her as a surprise. "I was blindsided, publicly and professionally, without the courtesy of conversation," she said. "It's difficult not to conclude that this decision is retaliatory and rooted in my relationship with former district Dr. Alicia Geddes." The board unanimously dismissed Rankin from her position as director of business, effective immediately on Wednesday evening without pay. Parents' claims not addressed. Also during the public comment section, April Perkins addressed the board with her concerns. Perkins said she filed a complaint on October 15, 2024, concerning bullying, harassment, and discrimination, which she claims went without a response for months and was told in a letter her claims were unfounded. She claimed the bullying led to one of her sons to commit self-harm. His behavior changed, and because of the bullying, he was bullied by several students, Perkins said, adding he was called derogatory names, punched, and kicked. "My son started to disconnect from his peers and learning as a whole due to this extreme bullying." Perkins called for the board to do more. "You are also concerned with upholding an image instead of addressing real issues within the school system, and that's the problem," she said. Perkins said she withdrew her sons from the district due to those issues. Health insurance rates spike. District health rates are set to skyrocket 28.2%. More money woes for District 118 as the health insurance rates are expected to rise significantly next year. Alan Rivers, the Danville Education Association president, addressed the board about his concerns with the upcoming health insurance rate hike. "This year we got our renewal back and it's 28.2%, Rivers said. "One thing I would like everyone to keep in mind. Here in this district, we have two good benefits. One, paid retirement, and good and affordable health insurance." Board member Christopher Easton said to the board that Allen's concerns were legitimate. "I can see in the budget for this year a $2.4 million increase in premiums," Easton said. "For teachers, that is a lot of money for an increase, and you see your budget was already at a deficit." Easton went on to add that the increase is only for 1 year, so they need to plan for the increase. "We have to start really getting creative. I think it's something to point out," he said, "not to be an alarmist, but a realist, that is all." Other news, the Danville High School Band will be bringing the music to the veterans on November 13th in honor of Veterans Day. Music instructors Gage Womack and Jeff Thomas will be taking a group of students to the Ileana Danville VA facility since it's hard for the VA to transport all of the veterans to the school. "The VA is going to provide a lunch for the veterans, and they're going to allow us to perform for them on the campus of the VA," he said. "And so we're really excited to do this. We think it's going to be a great way to continue to perform for them, but continue to perform for them while bringing the show to them." The event will begin around noon with a lunch, and they'll play for 45 minutes while they eat. DeAndre Day reminded the public that the HCBU Fair is coming up and is hosted by the Jelani Day Foundation. It'll take place on Thursday, November 6th at Danville High School in the Fieldhouse. Day said he expects more than 20 historical black colleges and universities to be present. "Through our continued fight for justice for Jelani," Day said about the event, "where our frantic team is a legacy of service, excellence, and empowerment, showing our students here in Danville that education cannot only be a dream, but it can truly take you anywhere." Every principal within District 118 also gave a presentation before the board. Most of them highlighted challenges with chronic absenteeism and their goals to reduce it. Associate Superintendent Markesha Parker addressed the board. "Our chronic absenteeism at this point in the year is at 19%. And so chronically absent, it's 10% of more of your days absent. The district's overall goal is to reduce the number by 25%. Three students from Edison Elementary presented the board with a slideshow and a presentation on Wednesday night with insightful facts about alligators and more. The CEO of Project Success, Kimberly David, spoke with the board about the new parent mentor program, as well as more violence prevention. "We're using evidence-based curricula and all the Danville after-school programs teaching Too Good for Drugs and other evidence-based programs for violence prevention," Davis told the board. "We also do a lot of family educational events, fun events, and we can also provide family hardship assistance for the kids that are in our programs." The board also approved the addition of an IEP translator and recommended that the payment for a psychology intern be higher than the requested $25,000. "It doesn't seem like you raised it high enough to compete with inflation, so I'd like to look back at it," Easton said. "If this is a real human being, they're worth more than $25,000 even as an intern," he added about not using a virtual version. Kyle Weinberg, director of Goldman Grounds, went before the board to recommend that they pass the 25-28 Social Collective Bargaining Agreement with the International Union of Operating Engineers. I suggest we come to an agreement. I think it's fair, Weinberg said. Easton added it was important for the public to be aware of the vote, which was 26 in favor, 25 against. I just think it's important to know the vote total, Easton said. In news from our city, Finch files suit against the city and mayor. Sandra Finch, a former city employee, is suing the city of Danville and Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. Finch cited her firing in February by the Human Relations Department as discriminatory and retaliatory. In a news release from Langacker Law, her attorney Ronald Langacker said that Finch exemplified dedication to the people of Danville for 35 years. She served honorably through three different mayoral administrations, working to enforce anti-discrimination laws and protect residents' rights, Langacker said. Ms. Finch looks forward to addressing the injustice of her dismissal in court. Court records say in the suit, allegedly Finch emailed Williams on September 26, 24, in regards to a tenant notice that appeared to her to be retaliatory, citing the city's Chapter 163 ordinance and asked how the city wished to proceed with this possible violation. Records state the matter was closed by the city without taking any action on Finch's claim, closing the file a month later. The tenant then sought out legal help regarding an eviction. Following that, Williams accused Finch of misconduct. Court records state Finch was told she had not been clocking in and out of her shift as required, and her employment was terminated on February 4th. Records state the plaintiff was discharged without any progressive discipline, prior warning, and/or being allowed to correct any alleged issue. The swiftness and severity of this action were unprecedented for someone in the plaintiff's position as a department head, especially given the trivial nature of the purported offense. The court document continues stating there were no options for reconciliation and claims the reason for Finch's firing was pretextual and false. The documents charge the city and the mayor with violation of the Illinois Whistleblowers Act, racial discrimination in violation of the Illinois Human Rights Act, and age discrimination in violation of the Illinois Human Relations Act. Finch is asking for damages to compensate her for her job loss, punitive damage, attorney fees and cost, prejudgment interest, and a trial by jury. Continuing with local news, Danville man found guilty of three felonies, and this is a staff report. William Coleman, 43, of Danville, was found guilty on Thursday by a Vermilion County jury on three felony charges. According to a release from the state's attorney's office, the charges against Coleman were unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon, a Class 3 felony, aggravated unlawful use of a weapon, no FOID, a Class 4 felony, and aggravated use of weapon, no concealed carry license, a Class 4 felony. The case was prosecuted by Assistant State's Attorneys Jake Klein and Daniel Reynolds. The people presented evidence that on January 29, 2023, at a bar on North Vermilion Street, Danville police responded in reference to a handgun that had been found inside the women's restroom. Security footage identified Coleman walking into the women's restroom. Following a thorough investigation by Danville Police Department and lab testing by the Illinois State Police Crime Lab, results confirmed Coleman's DNA on the trigger of the firearm. The people also presented to the jury the additional charges were filed against Coleman in case number 2025 CF-747 for communication with a witness, a Class 3 felony. The witness testified that on September 15th, Coleman grabbed her by the arm at the same bar and talked to her about his pending case where she is a witness. The witness testified that Coleman told her to plead the fifth and say she was drunk. Officers collected security footage that confirmed the witness statements. This case is pending and a status hearing is scheduled for December 18th. State's Attorney Jacqueline Lacey, along with Klein and Reynolds, thanked the witness for coming forward to initially report the gun and for bravely continuing to cooperate during the additional report of communication with a witness. They also thanked the Danville Police Department for their investigation. We thank the members of the jury for their time, careful attention to the evidence, and for their service to our community, said Lacey in the news release. The trial was presided over by Judge Mark Goodwin, and a sentencing hearing is scheduled for December 18th. We're just about at that midway point of our time together, so let's take a break from the news and take a look at our death notices that were received by Friday in the business offices of paper. First up, we have Earl William Phillips. Earl William Bill Phillips, 71, of Tilton, passed away on October 18th at home, surrounded by his loving family. A graveside service will be held on Saturday, November 1st at 1 p.m., at Songer Cemetery at 1600 North Danville, Illinois. Rortvedt Funeral Services and Crematory are honored to assist the family with their arrangements. Susan J. Clausen. Susan Jewel Clausen, 83 of Danville, passed away on Friday, October 17th. Per her wishes, cremation rites will be accorded. A celebration of her life will be held at 11:30 a.m. Central Time, Sunday, November 16th at Turtle Run Banquet Center at 332 East Liberty Lane in Danville. There will be memories, photos, music, and light hors d'oeuvres. Burial will take place at a later date at Danville National Cemetery. Arrangements have been entrusted to Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center on Vermilion Street in Danville. The family would like to thank Hawthorne Inn Manor Court and Traditions Hospice for their care, compassion, and comfort during her final days. In lieu of flowers, the family requests memorials to be made to the National Czech and Slavic Museum and Library at 1400 Inspiration PISW, Cedar Rapids, Iowa, the American Breast Cancer Foundation, or to cure Alzheimer's. That concludes the reading of our death notices for this week. Let's turn our attention to news from our state. Here's a headline I don't love as much as others. Gas rate increases likely. This comes to us from Andrew Adams at the Capital News, Illinois. Customers across Illinois could face increased natural gas rates next year based on proposed decisions in two proceedings before the Illinois Commerce Commission. The regulatory agency, which oversees gas utilities, is considering two requests from Nicor Gas in Emeryn, Illinois. A five-member panel of commissioners appointed by Governor J.B. Pritzker will make the final decision in the cases in November. But administrative judges overseeing the cases have released proposed decisions which suggest cutting Nicor and Emeryn's requests by only about a third. Nicor, which delivers natural gas to 2.3 million customers in northern and western Illinois, asked for a $314 million rate increase in January, equivalent to about $91.50 per year, or a 9.21% increase for residential customers, according to the company. Emeryn, which has 800,000 customers throughout downstate Illinois, asked for a $129 million increase in January, or about $100 per year, which is 13% increase for residential customers, according to the Citizens Utility Board, a consumer watchdog group. The proposed decisions cut Nicor's request by $109.8 million and Emeryn's by about $43.7 million, according to CUB. Emeryn officials said the cuts bring the increase down to $5.80 per month, or about $70 per year for the typical customer, and Nicor officials said the increase under the order would be about 5-6%. Even with the proposed increase, our distribution rates remain among the lowest of any major natural gas utility in Illinois, and the total bill for an average residential customer under proposed rates continues to remain in line with the Consumer Price Index, Nicor spokesperson Jennifer Goles said in a statement. Brad Kloppel, Emeryn's senior director of gas operations, defended his company's request for higher rates by saying the majority of the increased revenue will go towards safety upgrades and compliance with federally required safety testing. 50% of the pipes in our system are over 50 years old, Kloppel said. We have to design, operate, maintain our system to provide gas service on the coldest hour of the coldest day. Emeryn's rate case also includes pilot programs that could swap gas service in some areas for electric service and for an incentive program for renewable natural gas, a method of capturing methane from landfills and other sources that would otherwise be released as a pollutant. Despite proponents' claims that it can help reduce greenhouse gas emissions, some environmentalists criticize that technology for still releasing some pollutants. Advocates want more cuts. The gas cases have attracted significant attention from consumer advocacy groups who say the requests go too far and represent a trend of increasingly frequent rate hikes. This is part of a troubling trend being repeated, where large rate hikes are becoming the norm and consumers simply cannot keep paying the price, Jeff Scott, AARP's senior associate state director, said in a statement. The most frequent target of utility criticism from consumer groups in cases like these is in the return on equity, a way of calculating the profits returned to shareholders. Nicor asked regulators for a bump from about 9.1% to 10.35%, and Emeryn's ask was similar, 9.44% to 10.7%. Most of the reductions recommended by the administrative law judges stem from lowering both companies' return on equity figures to 9.93%. Most of the overall reduction to both rate increases comes from the lower profit rates, with reductions also stemming from cuts to things like post-employment benefits. The companies always claim this is about maintenance, but at the same time, they're asking for an outrageous profit rate for their shareholders, CUB spokesperson Jim Chilson said. That exposes their true motivation for their rate hike requests. In the meantime, the deadline for the commission to act is November 24th in the NICOR case and December 1st in the Ameren case. Well, let's take a break from the harder news stories and take a look at our feature articles for the day. And I thought you might enjoy hearing from Lavinia Eicher. She writes an article that we don't always read in the paper because it usually is more based on recipes, and that's a little bit difficult to take down and make into an interesting story. But today she wrote a really beautiful article called Fall is a Beautiful Time of the Year. And if you're not familiar with Lavinia Eicher, the column is called Lavinia's Amish Kitchen. She's an old order writer, cook, wife, and mother of eight. She has three cookbooks out, and she's comes to us from Michigan. Again, the headline of her article today, Fall is a Beautiful Time of the Year. This is Lavinia's daughter, Verena, writing. It's such a beautiful Monday evening. The leaves are changing color more and more, and it's always such a beautiful view once the leaves are changed to such pretty colors. Fall used to be my favorite season, and I would love to rake up the leaves. But with me being disabled, it became too much for me to handle as I grew older. I'm thankful I can now use a leaf blower and still get out there to help gather up the leaves. It's something I enjoy. I do not care for the stink bugs and ladybugs that also come with fall, since the beans were cut from across the road from us, but so be it. That is a very small thing to worry about, ha ha. Summer became my favorite season once my muscles started to weaken more. I discovered it was easier to get around in the warmer weather. I still enjoy the snow, but I feel cooped up when I can't go outside, especially when there's a lot of snow on the ground, although it does look pretty. But I do look forward to putting together puzzles and sitting by the kitchen table sipping on hot chocolate while Daniel Ray sips on his coffee during the cold winter months. Sitting here writing this is just another reminder to myself that life is really what you make it. I now have the laundry folded and ready to put away. Laundry is one of the jobs I'm not thrilled about and one of the jobs that is never ending. And also, same as dishes, but washing the dishes is a job I don't mind. Many times Daniel Ray will fold the laundry for me, but today was not one of those times. He had other jobs to attend once he was home from work. Daniel Ray is on 3 days as of right now at the RV factory. Thursday and Friday, he works at the buggy shop for another Amish man in the community. As of right now, he's learning how to build open cruiser seats. He enjoys the work so far. Daniel Ray and I butchered two sheep on Saturday. Daniel Ray's parents came to help us. We were so glad for their help. Daniel Ray's siblings, Anna, age 13, William, age 8, and Alvin, age 6, came along as well. We canned 14 quarts of deer burger and got 14 bags, half-quart bags, of deer burger for the freezer. Daniel Ray wants to make beef jerky this week yet sometime. I'm hoping Daniel Ray or I will get another deer soon because I would like to can deer chunks. Sister Liz said that she canned them and put beef flavoring in it. It tastes not so far from beef chunks that way. I'm excited to try it. We drove to go over to Sister Liz and her husband, Tim, again this week. Sometimes I can try my luck at hunting again. So far, I haven't had a chance at a deer, but Daniel Ray shot two already out of Sister Susan and her husband Irvin's property. We now have to buggy our buggy back. It was getting fixed. Daniel Ray was getting around on his bike, and I was driving the e-wheels. The e-wheels is a bigger mobility scooter and more road-ready. I have a small trailer I can hook behind it and put my scooter on, but we got around like that a lot this summer. It makes it so nice for me because now I can go with Daniel Ray when he goes on a bike ride. I know mine isn't a bike, but it still feels pretty close. It was nice to have our buggy back to go to church on Sunday because it was chilly and very foggy. The buggy lights are much brighter than the e-wheels or bike lights. We have a heater in our buggy, and it makes it nice and cozy for a horse and buggy ride. Well, you all take care, and God's blessings to you all. So that, again, was, well, apparently, Lavinia's daughter, Verena, writing the column today that fall is a beautiful time of the year. Well, let's turn our attention to what's going on in some local sports. This is out of the boys' soccer. The journey continues. Danville boys' soccer goes to regional. This comes to us from Marvin Holman. It's been just about a decade since the Danville boys' soccer team won a regional game, but this season's Vikings have a way to get around long droughts. Danville broke that regional loss streak on Tuesday with a penalty kick win over Champaign Centennial and will now try to beat another decade-long streak today at noon against Muhammad Seymour in the IHSA Class 2A regional final at Champaign Centennial. It is also the completion of a journey that Danville head coach Ron Sillings has taken since he took over the job in the 2022 season. We won one game in 2022, and I should have wrote a book on all the positive messages after a loss, Sillings said. It was by the grace of God that we increased the next 3 years. The kids kept coming back and started working in the summer because I told them that it has to be a lifestyle. Other teams play travel ball and go around, so we can't just start 2 weeks before the season and expect to compete with them. We had to start running and practicing in the summer, and the captains took leadership. That's the blessing in players coming to practice and working hard. Not only did they have to play the Chargers on Wednesday, a team they lost to 4-2 earlier this season, they did it with senior Liam Rome coming off the bus, learning that he was going to be a goalkeeper. I played goalkeeper only 3 times in my life, so I knew it was going to be hard. So I kept my mindset and composure, and it helped me a lot, Rome said. We knew coming into the game it was going to be hard and a great fight, but I felt that we had the edge because we've been working since last year, and we knew that this season was going to be good. When we got into the game, we had nothing to lose. We were underdogs all season, so this was our season to come out, and we deserved it for all the work we have done. The game was a tie at 1-1. It went to penalty kicks where junior Shaw Black scored the winning goal for a 4-3 win. It was very great, and it was awesome to hit the game-winning goal, Black said. Turning this program and playing for something, playing for a school and our AD, Gary Gretton, meant something. The adrenaline built up, and it was great to release it with the celebration afterwards. It was a good challenge, and it helped me be a better player, and I was happy we picked it up, junior Adam Perez said. Our goal this year was to get 12 wins, and we were able to win it. It would be great to win and win in sectionals as well. For players like Black, Roman Perez, they have seen the depths and have been there for this season, which is 12, 11, and 4 so far, has gone over 10 wins in a season since the 2016 season. I think it's going to be great. We have a winning season, and it's been a long time, Perez said. We've been building up, and to reach this regional final is crazy, and I'm really happy how it's turning out. Well, we'll wish them success. I'm not sure how it went. I don't know the answer to that. Looking more of other sports going on, Bears go for their straight fifth win victory. I can't get my words out right now. This came to us from Noah Trister of the Associated Press. With or without Lamar Jackson, this weekend always felt like a last stand of sorts for the Baltimore Ravens. Fresh off an open date and with a roster a lot healthier than it was earlier this month, the Ravens hosted the Chicago Bears on Sunday. At 1-5, Baltimore is already in quite a hole, but after Chicago, their schedule eases up significantly. The question is, at what point might it be too late? The bye week was great, center Tyler Linderbaum said. A good reset, good opportunity to get guys healthy, and a good opportunity to make a run and go 12-5. Just getting a 2-5 won't necessarily be easy. The Bears are 4-2, arrive on a 4-game winning streak, but after the Ravens face Miami, Minnesota, Cleveland, and New York Jets, and Cincinnati, there's a chance to make a run if Baltimore can just win one more game to get it started. A return by Jackson's crucial after he missed the past 2 games with a hamstring injury. He practiced this week but was listed as questionable for the game. It's really not what I would have to see. It's the players that really have to feel comfortable going out there and putting themselves in a position to play, offensive coordinator Todd Monken said Thursday. He said he's ready to go. I'm ready to go. I feel great. Any player that says they want to play, I'm all in. It's up to them. Well, we'll wish the Bears luck. I'm not really sure, again, how that one turned out. But for those of you that Bears fan, I hope you're having a happy day. Well, as we wind down our time together, let's take a look at what's going to go on with us for weather this week. I don't have to tell you all, it's been a fairly dry around here. When I look at the Almanac statistics, though, I guess it puts it into perspective. Year to date, we have had 28.26 inches of precipitation. Our normal year to date is 34.43. That is a big difference. And it doesn't look like this week holds a ton of rain either. Looks like our highs are going to be, we are full on in fall because it looks like our highs are going to be in the upper 50s most of the week with our lows anywhere from 45 down into the 30s on Wednesday. Looks like Monday, Tuesday, yep, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, all highs between 53 and 58 degrees. Our Monday's warmest day of the week is going to be Monday. The only chance that we have of precipitation is on Wednesday. We have a chance of a shower on that day, but it looks like we're going to just be in for a cloudy, cool week. This has been Terry Burdick reading to you from the Commercial News for the weekend. from Saturday and Sunday, October 25th and 26th. I hope you all have a great week, and I look forward to reading again with you soon. Stay warm.